Uncle Sam presents Wings to Victory. Attention, Mr. and Mrs. Dave Miller, USA. The story of the Bismarck Sea Battle, in which land-based air power destroyed 10 Japanese warships and 12 transports, completely annihilating the enemy force with a loss of only 4 planes. From the West Coast, ladies and gentlemen, the Army Air Forces present Wings to Victory, a dramatization of American heroism based on combat reports from the fighting front. For obvious reasons, the names of characters in these true stories are fictitious.
Midway and the Battle of the Bismarck Sea are the two great victories of American air power in this war. Both started with attacks by powerful Japanese naval units escorting troop convoys. At Midway and in the Bismarck Sea, airplanes did all the actual fighting for us. It was the Jap Navy against our bombing and torpedo planes, and the Jap Navy suffered staggering losses in both battles. We of the Army Air Forces are proud to share credit with our Navy and Marine flyers for these impressive demonstrations of air power. There is glory enough for all. There is plenty of fighting left to do. The Bismarck Sea fight, like all battles, must be described in terms of men and weapons. But it was also a startlingly dramatic instance of what men call fate, or blind chance, or providential intervention. And like all battles, the Bismarck Sea engagement began with a scout plane's report of preparations for an attack. In our New Guinea Air Base headquarters that day, an intelligence officer hurried in to the Army Air Force commanding general.
You look a bit excited, Tommy. Something up?
Yes, sir. The Japs left Rabaul. One of our patrol planes just sent in this report.
Let me see. About 20 ships. Half of them transports or cargoes.
They're moving behind a storm, you'll note, sir. Mm-hmm. Our people lost contact with them almost immediately.
Yes. Those Japs never miss a trick. Send a flash to General MacArthur, Tommy.
Yes, sir.
Where's that weatherman?
I'll call him at once, sir.
Right. And ask Colonel Hardesty to step in.
A few minutes later, the general was conferring with Captain Malone, his weather officer, and Colonel Hardesty, his operations chief.
They've picked a beautiful weather front, General. If you'll take a look at my map here, this low pressure area was centered north of Rabaul yesterday. It's moving south-southeast.
Is it solid, Captain?
The worst one we've had since I came to New Guinea. I'd say the ceiling was zero in this entire oval. 40 miles by 60 miles, roughly.
Mm-hmm. How long will it last, Captain?
3 days at a minimum, Colonel.
3 days? It'll be here by then.
No chance for the storm to veer off, Malone?
I wish I could be more cheerful, but this isn't the kind of storm that veers. We call it a creepy-weepy, sir. It just lopes along, pouring down buckets of rain.
Aren't we ever going to get the brakes down here?
No, they won't get away with this, General.
20 shiploads of Japs hitchhiking on a storm. Have you sent out some more reconnaissance planes, Joe?
Yes, sir. PBYs and Fortress.
Good.
The storm's hitting us right on schedule, sir. You remember, I predicted...
I don't care what you predicted.
Yes, sir.
Maybe if we shot all our weathermen, we wouldn't have any weather.
That's an idea, Joe. But never mind, Malone. We're just a couple of mean-tempered mugs.
It is maddening, sir.
General, a message from headquarters just off the teletype.
From the old man?
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh. Well, no. Listen to this, Joe. Am sure weather will improve. Stand by to attack with all planes at earliest opportunity. MacArthur.
Wish I could be sure, sir.
So do I.
General MacArthur may have some new information from his weather staff. I'll check with him at once, sir.
Yes, you do that, Captain.
He probably hasn't any new information, sir. He's an old-fashioned praying Christian, you know.
That's right, Tommy. And just at the moment, it wouldn't hurt any of us to do some praying. We'll need it.
The tension of that first day and night was felt by every soldier and airman in New Guinea. Somewhere to the northward, under the perfect cover of a tropical storm, A Japanese striking force was on its way. American doughboys in their muddy foxholes at the front beyond Buna had heard the news.
Hey, you guys, open up. It's Eddie. I got news.
Okay, but shake yourself first. We don't want no more water in here.
Water? You should worry about a little water. The whole Jap Navy's coming with 100 transports.
Yeah? No kidding?
Malarkey, who said that?
The Sarge, that's who. And he got it straight from Lieutenant Pierce.
100 transports?
Well, maybe not 100, but 20. All flyers counted 20 or 30 before the weather closed in.
Even 20? That's 30,000 Jap 30. I don't believe it.
You'll believe it when you roll out to dig those trenches deeper. The Sarge says all hands got to dig deeper as soon as the rain eases off a little.
What a break. We kill nearly all the Japs. Then they send 10 more for every dead one. Judas.
Don't worry about Jap soldiers. It's those warships you better start worrying about. Right, Biffa?
Yeah. When a warship shells you, it's murder.
Nothing can stop them in this weather. They'll sneak right up close. Wham, 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 like that. Then when they got you buried in the shell holes, all of them new Japs will pile ashore. Thousands of them.
How far off are they? Did the Sarge say?
Not far. They'll be here by morning, probably.
Maybe it'll stop raining.
Yeah, fat chance. I'm going to start digging right now. Come on, you guys. Don't just sit there shivering. We're right in the front line.
Our advanced air base on New Guinea was right in the front line, too. 8-inch guns from Jap cruisers could lob shells into runways and hangars. The cruisers got close enough to shore. The rain and the darkness that long Tuesday night was a mocking, tormenting ordeal. We had Fortresses, B-25 Billy Mitchells, Boston A-20s, and P-38 Lightnings there. But they squatted impotently at their dispersal points, held to earth by the black hand of weather. And in a pilot's readiness hut, three young lieutenants were sweating it out.
I think it's easing off a little.
Yeah, it's only coming down in small pails now. Shut that door, you goofs.
Why don't you go to bed, Ralph? Your temper's getting worse and worse.
I couldn't sleep. I'm browned up. I'm cheese. I just lie there cussing Japs.
Why cuss them? What good does that do?
Well, if I can't kill them, I'm going to cuss them. Yeah, the sneaking, squint-eyed little so-and-sos.
Oh, now you got Dave doing
it. I'm a volunteer. I'm really commencing to hate those skibbies.
Yeah, me too.
From Hirohito down to Kurosu, and his dog, and his dog's pups. There's rain, I don't... Hey, what's that? Hey, Jap, they're coming.
Hey, no. Sit down. It's only those Aussies. The general says they could be the first to go in if the rain quits. Just warming up their engines.
The jerks, we're socked in solid, and they know that. Yeah, I bet they're putting floats on those Beauforts. Shut them off! Judas, I thought the Japs were right on top of it.
Oh, for Pete's sake. What's got into you guys? I never saw everybody so rawhide, edgy, and mean.
You tell him, Dave. Benny knows. He's just putting on an act.
No, I'm not. You guys seem to think they're going to get away with this. They can't hide forever.
Yeah? Why can't they?
Because it's going to stop raining pretty soon. That's why. Well, now, wait a minute. I bet this storm busts up before daylight.
Uh-huh.
It isn't in the cards that they can hide all the way down here.
Japs can hide under boards and rocks. They hide in trees and in the dark, or they can hide in broad daylight. How about it, Ralph?
Yep. We're right back fighting Apache Indians.
Don't insult the Apaches. They were sweet guys compared to Japs. No, I wish I had my college history prof down here.
Huh?
I'd tie a chain around his neck and stick him out with the infantry on the Salamaua line.
Why? What did he ever do to you?
He told me all men were brothers.
Oh, I had one of those starry-eyed fools, too. Only his line was that nobody ever really wants to fight. They were sure wrong back home.
Especially about the Japs.
Sure, but that's easy to explain, Dave.
Oh, it is?
Sure. The Japs were our invention. Old Admiral Perry busted into their monkey land 3 generations ago.
Yeah.
We put pants on the Japs and sold them their horn-rimmed specs. We thought that made them civilized. They flattered us by copying our dime stores and baseball slang.
So
naturally, we thought we'd made a lot of little minor league Americans out of them. And were we chumps?
Now you're talking sense, Benny.
If they told us that, we maybe wouldn't have had to come down here to New Guinea to learn it the hard way.
Well, us Americans stick up for our inventions to the bitter end, pal. We can't get it into our heads that the Japs came out of the Dark Ages. And you can't civilize them in 60 years.
Oh, yeah? Well, I've got it into my head.
Me too, Benny.
Well, then, don't let them frazzle your nerves. Just accept the fact that we're fighting savages and... You just, what's that?
Douse the light. Hey, they're rushing the field. Grab your gun. Come on.
Take it easy.
Hey, you, what goes on?
False alarm, sir. A kid sentry thought he saw some Japs.
Oh, I see. Geez, funny thing. Now I'm starting to get sore.
You and about 900 other guys.
Yeah, and told you better keep hiding. This time we'll really do it to him. We'll bloody the ocean with him.
Yeah, they're asking for it this time. That stinking rain. It won't ever stop.
They were not getting any sleep at Air Force headquarters either. The general and Colonel Hardesty kept the long vigil at a desk littered with maps, telephones, reports, and cans of black coffee.
We'll call operations again. That last plane should have reported by now.
I just called him, sir.
Call him again.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Hello. Get me Major Clemens. It's urgent. Well, break through. Right. I'll hang on.
Well, they're obviously headed for Huon Gulf. We'll make a landing in July. Another 12 hours, we'll bring them in. We've got to get at them today if we're going to do the old man any good up there.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
That convoy tells the difference. We're just kidding ourselves. This is a big push, Joe. If they make it stick, we'll all be headed back across the mountains.
We will, sir.
5 months of hard fighting gone bluey.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Hello, Clemens. Any word yet? How long? Oh,
sir. He says they're expecting a report any minute.
He's been telling us that for an hour.
Hello. Hello, keep this wire open, Clemens. And call me as soon as you hear.
Plane is probably lost.
No, I don't think so, General.
We're having the toughest luck. You'd think General MacArthur would get one decent break after all the tough ones he's had. Now this storm pours it on.
And we've still got a few hours, sir.
The fortunes of war. The imponderable. Nice phrases when you hear them at staff college lectures. Not so nice when you know the 12 shiploads of skibbies armed to the teeth are getting set to pounce on... I'll take it. Hello. Hello, Clemens. Yes. Yes, I see. Are you sure of that, huh? Read it to me. Yes. Right. Very well. I hope that pilot's in his right mind.
The storm, sir?
He says it's clearing out there. He spotted him off Cape Grenard.
Oh, that's nice. That's very nice.
Maybe even better than that. You call General MacArthur. I'll start the props turning.
Long before dawn, the props were turning at every American airdrome in New Guinea. Fortress squadrons, B-25 Mitchells, A-20 Havocs, Warhawks, Aerocobras, and Lightnings. Yes, we meant to throw every airplane we had in New Guinea at the Japs. A squadron of Australian torpedo bombers made the first battle contact. Its leader reported to headquarters by radio phone.
Adelaide to control. Adelaide to control.
This is control receiving your...
Wing Commander Johnson reporting. We've sighted the enemy from 6,000 feet. Visibility is quite good. Four ships, two transports and two large destroyers, all bearing on a course 174, true toward Huon Gulf. The other ships, about 20 of them, are strung out for 15 miles north-northwest. We've taken them completely by surprise. I rather imagine the silly fellows thought they'd have a storm with them all the way.
Control to Adelaide. Control to Adelaide.
Yes, old chap, receiving you.
Have you sighted any flat tops?
No, sir. Nothing larger than a cruiser. They'll have a lot of zeros out from Lye here soon, no doubt. Our bowfighters are just going down to strafe the decks. We must follow them in. Going to be a wizard show. Would you care for a sort of running commentary?
By all means.
All right, old man, stand by. Our bowfighters are diving from 8,000. They're quite keen to have a go at the Nips. Uh-oh, the Nips are waking up. Going to get some air, Gag. I'm checking all the troop ships now. I can see tracer bullets splattering along the deck. Three more have come in to strafe a destroyer to my left. Time for us to go in now. Hello. Hello, Control.
Go right ahead, Commander.
We've set two transports afire. All the Nips are going overboard. Grass and a few lifeboats. Fires lighting up the water. Like a big green swimming pool with floodlights. I can even see their legs kicking. We're shooting at them now. It's going to be a bloody day. Sorry, I'll have to ring off now. I can't shoot and talk. Oh, wait a minute. The first wave of your Mitchell bombers has just come in.
These Mitchells, the fast twin-engine ships Doolittle and his men used to bomb Tokyo, were the star squadrons of the Bismarck Sea Battle. They flew at masthead height along that line of Jap transports and warships. Their attack was coordinated with high-level bombing runs by fortresses. The Japs had zeros in the air when the first Mitchell struck at dawn. The Jap AK-AK crews were firing frantically, and every ship was running in wild gyrations. But the Mitchells picked their targets, and one squadron reported.
Little Bell to control. Superstructure of destroyer entirely blown away. Two direct hits.
Johnny, jump up to control. Two bombs on deck of large transport. One of them has just blown up the vessel amidships. It's sinking.
Mike Al Sal to control. Two direct hits on deck of a cruiser or large destroyer. Heavy dark smoke is rising to 1,500 feet. Rumble Rats to control. Two direct hits on 5,000-ton transport. She's on fire.
Daisy May to control. We've just finished strafing three ships with our guns. I think they're going to remember us.
Okay, about to control. One direct hit. One near miss on a cruiser. She's badly damaged and listing heavily to starboard. Also, one direct hit on a transport. It's bursting into flames. It's sinking.
We had our teamwork well coordinated. The bullfighters and aerocobras drove Japanese gun crews off the decks, killing them or sweeping them overside. Then our Mitchells and Havocs and Bostons came in with low-level attacks, while fortresses and liberators cut loose with heavier bombs from high altitude. Blinded, bewildered, staggered, the Japs dived overboard. The air was a hell, they knew, but the ocean might save them, they thought. But the pilots of a fighter squadron, veterans of Guadalcanal, had a different idea. As this group of... There was grim talk over the radio phones.
Skipper. Hello, Skipper. This is Benny.
Yes, Benny.
I can't see anything but burning ships and Japs in the water. What can we do?
A Jap in the water is still a Jap, kid.
Benny thinks we're going to watch him swim ashore. Tell him in plain words, Skipper. He thinks we came out here to watch the Japs demonstrate the Australian crawl.
Benny knows better than that.
Dave and Ralph are the boys you have to brace up, Skipper. They want to throw water wings to these little so-and-so.
I'll throw plenty to them, but not water wings, Benny.
Attention, all pilots.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, we're out here to give the Japs a taste of his own medicine. It isn't going to be pleasant for any of us. But it's our job to see that not a Jap soldier or sailor reaches shore to reinforce the Lai garrison. We kill him here, or our infantry will have to kill him the hard way. Now, I want you all to sight at 2:30 o'clock by my plane. And note a large force of enemy lifeboats, rafts, barges, and swimmers bearing toward shore. See him?
I see him, Skipper. So do I. Oh, boy, what a target.
Why, Ralph.
Yes, sir?
I fail to detect the proper note of regret in your voice. We're fighting a kind-hearted foe who generously rescued all the crew of the Quincy, the Astoria, and the Vincennes.
I hope those sailors are watching this.
And the buddies we left on Guadalcanal, Dave.
And the Tommies they abandoned in Singapore.
I hope those Filipino kids and those Chinese women are watching this. I hope every soul in torture they tortured and murdered is watching this.
What, no crocodile tears for those sweet little Japanese?
Let's get at it, sir.
Yeah, let's get at it. Now, watch your ammunition. Each man is to save 200 rounds for the trip back to the base. Get the boats and barges first. Fire in your own sector. 50 yards up front to each man. Now let's go. Red squadron to base. Red squadron to base.
Okay, Red Squadron, receiving you.
I would say that there are about 100 Japs left alive. Now, cut that figure to a couple of dozen. I believe that's all I have to report.
This phase of the battle, on or near the surface of the sea, was no more intense than the fight raging high upstairs. Fortresses, with a top cover of warhawks, aerocobras, and lightnings, swept an area 15 miles long and 10 miles wide. They ran into flight after flight of Jap Zeros. A flying fortress squadron reports.
Pimpinella to control. Pimpinella to control.
Okay, Pimpinella, receiving you.
Tell the general there are 14 Jap ships left and 5 of them are burning. Correction. A large transport just blew up. The Jap pursuit is very active. They seem unusually expert. I think they're playing their first team against us today. We've just finished our run. You can mark us up with... Mark us up with a hit and a near miss on a destroyer. And my gunner's just got a zero. We're coming in for more bombs.
And in the cockpit of a B-38 Lightning, an excited youngster yells at his flight leader.
Captain Morris, I got 5 zeros on my tail.
I see them, Billy. How's that? Any better?
Yeah, thanks. Not enough 2 of them around that guy.
Yeah, well, go shoot him off, Billy.
Yes, sir! I got one, sir! I got one! Now I'm going to chase that other rat down to the water. I got him too, Captain! He's fresh! He's burning right in the water! Yippee!
The battle roared to its final climax that afternoon. One fortress shot down 4 zeros in as many minutes. Ah, little men of Nippon. You remember the Panay? A flight of A-20 Douglas bombers skittered across waves heavy with wreckage and literally bounced their bombs against a cruiser. Then at a transport loaded with Jap soldiers. That was a payment against Pearl Harbor. Boston bombers snarled at the wakes of 2 destroyers. That was for Bataan. And then the ships blew up while they flaming with broken backs and the waters blossomed with brown Jap heads. Our fighter planes dived in once more to kill them. Ah, Tojo, you should be here. The peasant louts you drove to war are dying by the thousands. Tojo, where are you? At 3 p.m., a single reconnaissance plane droned above the Bismarck Sea.
Scout plane number 6107 to base. Scout plane number 6107 to base. I am ready to report.
Base to number 6107, receiving you clearly.
Sighted from 500 feet. 3 cargoers, 2 destroyers, 1 large, 1 small. They are all that is left of enemy convoy. All cargoers are fire, smoke rising 3,000 feet. Large destroyer moving slowly with heavy oil slick pouring out from stern. Small destroyer low in water with hole in starboard waterline. Do you understand?
Roger. Continue report.
I see no indication that any Japanese made shore. The target area is covered with wreckage, some of it still burning. I have passed above 8 miles of this debris. A thorough strafing job was done. The water is thick with bodies. I have observed many sharks. That is all.
Late that afternoon, at Air Force headquarters, the general commanding talked to a small group war correspondent.
More good news, General?
Yes, we appear to have made a clean sweep.
All 22 ships down, sir?
2 crippled destroyers are left. We'll finish them off in the morning.
Thank you, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to get this flash
off. Oh, just a moment, Jack. I have a request to make of all you fellas.
Yes, sir?
I hope you'll try to keep your stories calm and objective. We naturally feel glad that it was the Japs who did the dying this time and not us. But it might have been the other way around.
That's right, sir.
I'd appreciate it if you'd go easy on the grimness. There are a lot of people back home who still believe that if we only smile at the Japs hard enough, their better natures will persuade them to surrender.
Well, haven't they heard what happened at Nanking?
And at Hong Kong? And at Singapore?
Yes, they've read about it, but you don't get to know the Japanese until you've watched them making war and fought them and seen them kill Americans. If I were writing about this battle, I'd stress the point that we were very lucky indeed. If the storm had hung on a day longer, the Japanese could have shelled our positions and landed overwhelming reinforcements. Then we'd have had a lot of dead American boys.
Sir, may I interrupt for a moment?
Well, what is it, Tommy?
General MacArthur has just issued a statement at his headquarters. They sent a copy over for the newspapermen here.
Let me see him. Gentlemen, I'd like to read this to you. United Nations Headquarters, Australia. American and Australian flyers have won a brilliant victory against a strong Japanese convoy in the Bismarck Sea. Our decisive success cannot fail to have a most important effect on the enemy's tactical plans. His campaign, at least for the time being, is completely dislocated. Merciful Providence has guarded us in this great victory. MacArthur.
The men of the Army Air Forces have made of faith a living word. Our Bible tells us that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Every American boy who climbs into the sky with our white star on his wings is a new prophet of an ancient truth. He has transcended a natural law which for 12,000 years kept man bound to dirt and water. He is flying. He and his plane are of themselves the substance of things hoped for. He must live by faith. Faith in American engineers. Faith in American labor. Faith in American manufacturers. He may take their integrity for granted. It is there. He has been given an honest machine. He turns to his crew chief and asks, "Is it ready, Sarge?" The crew chief says, "It is ready." By that assurance, our flyer lives. He goes off to his mission. He may say he is piloting a Warhawk or a Lightning or a Liberator, but he is sustained 5 miles above the earth by the evidence of things not seen. A laborer's will to work or a mechanic's sense of duty cannot be built into an image or put into a chart. Flyers, beyond all other men, must have faith in mankind. But there is something else, a far greater something. Every flyer takes off across the chasm and lands each time beside an open grave. Death may wait for him at the next turn in the clouds. The faith he has in himself and in his comrades may not be quite enough. He is sustained by something greater. One flyer has found it in the slow smile of a newborn day across the hills, and one has heard it as a far-off song when the clouds build a chancel at 10,000 feet. And yet another has looked down in the twilight when this small wicked earth was poisoning the sky with darkness and felt it then. Beyond the eternal tide of tears standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. Father Almighty, accept the wordless prayer of flyers. May their unspoken faith please thee, and thy strength be with them. Amen.
Listening to Wings to Victory, presented by the Army Air Forces. Sergeant Hal Gibney speaking. This war service program came to you from the West Coast. This is the Blue Network.